Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of In the Eyes of Truth. With us for the first time is Ethan Levins. Ethan is an American independent journalist. Ethan, welcome to the show.
Something feels off. Same news, same noise, different day.
Maybe you're just in the wrong place, mate.
Wait, what?
Maybe you've been here before.
I was what? I am a Cossack.
Wait, I remember this. I was a merchant.
Okay, this is getting weird. I was a Russian musician.
Okay, this is NOT what I expected.
Yeah, happens to everyone. We just moved. Moscow Connect helped with everything.
Visa, paperwork, life is sorted.
Wait, it's actually that simple?
Maybe it's not about escaping.
Maybe it's about finding where you actually belong.
Hey, excited to be here.
And you just got banned on X. Mm-hmm. What the hell's with that? What happened to free speech?
Exactly. It was. I just posted Israeli military coordinates that are public, which is what's crazy.
Oh, public.
I posted it. Yeah, I know. And the craziest part is I didn't post it on X. I never posted it on X. I posted it only on TikTok, which is like my smallest platform. And about 2 days later, X decides to ban me for unlawful behaviors. Whenever I didn't use X, I barely used it whenever this was happening.
So they banned my account at all on X, period.
Nope. Other people were posting it, but I wasn't tagged. None of that. I wasn't posting it. Other people were posting my TikTok from a separate platform that I didn't say my name in the video. So somebody had to have at X put two and two together and found my account to ban it, which was only like 18,000 followers. It was super tiny, and I barely posted on it. But that happened last week, and I had a lot of these MAGA people come at me, and they started posting me afterwards, calling for treason, calling me a traitor, tagging the FBI. It was bad. Some of the biggest accounts.
Wait a minute. Mm-hmm. This was an Israeli military base. Yep. Not an American military base.
Yep. The Palestinian air base.
How's that treason?
It's not. But to these people that see Israel essentially as equal to the U.S., which I guess they do, they saw it exactly like that. And they were calling for treason. They were saying I was putting American soldiers at risk. And I looked at that and said, well, why are we over there? We're not at that base to where I said it. And it's not an American system. It was an Aero system, which is Israeli owned, manufactured, operated, because I Googled it to make sure. And these people, as I'm commenting on some of these, like, this is not American. And they were still just hammering me that Iran's an enemy to the U.S., Iran's an enemy to me and my family. Therefore, I'm being a traitor to America and our soldiers. And then X went out of their way to ban me. They removed my creator revenue sharing, and I created a new account and it blew up, so that one's still active as of now. So hopefully nothing happens.
Well, we won't say anything about any Israeli cases.
I've stopped doing that.
Actually, I'm surprised it stayed on TikTok, considering who owns TikTok now.
It stayed up on TikTok. It stayed up the whole, and that's how I knew that this was a targeted attack from someone at X in particular, because I have a lot of problems with TikTok. If you say the wrong word on TikTok, your account just gets banned just like that. And I had a problem where they took about $5,000 from my TikTok account that was in my balance. They banned my account. I asked them, like, can you at least pay me out? Nope. So this video stayed up. It even qualified for the creator program. So I made money off the video. And X had a problem with all of that and decided that I couldn't be on their platform because of that. So I ruffled some feathers very badly at X over Israel, essentially.
Have you noticed that the Zionists and free speech, they don't get along too well?
No, especially whenever when you go against them, they no longer even try to like justify their opinion. They just attack. That's all they do is, whether it's like Laura Loomer, Mark Levin, these big names, they just it's no more defending themselves or defending their position. It's just attack, 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 docs, 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 call you an anti-Semite, call you these names, because their position doesn't stand on any authority, any points, morality. It's totally gone. There's no facts or rationale anymore for the pro-Israel Zionist position. So they just resort to violence and harassment. That's all they do.
I did two videos that you might find interesting. I did an interview with Father Bell, who is an Orthodox priest. We discussed Christian Zionism. Well, for the majority of Christians, including Protestant, majority of Protestants, it's a heresy. Flat out.
Yes.
It's a heresy. And then I did a another one with Yevon Radkin, who is a traditional Jewish, he's a professor of history at Montreal University, originally from the Soviet Union. And the guy became a professor in 1973. He's like, he's 80 something years old, still working. I mean, and the guy got around pretty well on the video because he wanted to get some tea. He's like, he's very mobile, good shape. But he's a traditional Jew. And for traditional Jews, Zionists are a heresy.
I've seen that stuff before. Yes. And because they believe that, God should bring the Jews back to Israel, the land of Israel, and that it shouldn't be the Jews themselves, because they were banished in the Old Testament theology. It's that the Jews were banished from Israel, and at the end of times, they're going to come back. So essentially, a lot of these, I guess you could call them pro-Palestinian Jews, I guess, but a lot of these traditional Jews, I've seen this one guy talk about it in New York. He was a rabbi, and he said, it's literally you're going against God and God's wishes to come back before the end of times is supposed to happen. And I've seen that before, and it really throws a wrench into that, especially for Christians, this Christian Zionist ideal, whenever you have traditional Jews that argue against it. And also to most Jews in Israel, a lot of people don't know this, they're secular. They're not even fully religious. So they see it more from an ethnic standpoint of the Jews need a homeland. Whenever, if you read the Old Testament, which is the Christian Zionists use religion to back their argument. If you actually use religion to look into it, even, I don't want to say correct, but even some Jews that look into it understand that it's not a religious position at all.
Well, you know, the river, the two stripes, and I always thought, you know, at first, yeah, you know, I said, it's, you know, it's just some Arab conspiracy, the greater Israel, river to the river. But then, you know, I've changed my mind since several years ago. But they're flat out telling you. You got Smulich, who's screaming for the mass murder of Palestinian children, who also went on television. In fact, he went on Israeli television and explained, yes, it's from the Euphrates to the Nile. It's all ours. But the interesting point in that is God promised the descendants of Abraham. Well, the Palestinians line goes back to Abraham, too, if we're going to go down that line. So exactly who was that promised, that what piece?
Yes.
You know, that. But again, for people, you're right, most of them are secular, but they'll take that point to mean that they get the bigger land.
To use it for them, yes. They'll use that point to try to justify their existence and their non-practicing. I learned this the other day, and it kind of scared me, that you probably know this, but Netanyahu's secular. I really had no idea that he wasn't, and I should have known this, but you know, you compare him to like Smoltrich and Ben-Gavir, you do see the like vast difference in how Netanyahu uses more so Israel's right to exist based off of other reasons versus religious reasons. Mm-hmm. But if he's talking to Christians, he uses the religious reasons in the Bible in order to justify not even the existence. Like, I have nothing against Israel, people living in Israel. Like, I don't want to see everybody get wiped out. But the problem is that when they slaughter people in Gaza, Lebanon, and in Iran now to justify their existence, like Smoltrich does, and use religious reasons, it's morally wrong and it's religiously wrong. They don't have a reason to do it. And I don't understand where they're pulling it from. If this is a real belief from Judaism that they fully stand by, like I think Smoltrich does, or if it's one of Netanyahu's weird visions of just dominance and inhumane morality, where they want to slaughter everyone they can around them because they know they can do it. And it's a weird, I think, because Netanyahu's coalition is filled with Gavir and Smoltrice. There are different political parties,
right,
but they fall in line with that idea of they both agree on we can do whatever we want and there's no moral basis whatsoever. Because the left in Israel is very different. And, you know, I'm a right-wing guy, but the left in Israel is a lot more humane versus Gavir, Smoltrice, and Netanyahu. But the Israelis vote for that side. So you do have to blame the people of Israel for propping that kind of government up because they lead the polls by far and they win every time. So it's a societal problem within Israel. This isn't the Israeli government's the bad guys. It's, well, of course, the civilians don't deserve any bombs or anything falling on their heads. But it's an Israeli societal issue that they have this belief that everyone around them, if they die, they die. And it just doesn't matter. That is a root problem in Israel that might never be fixed. So
you're right. You know, there's a Russian saying, "Или сними крестик, или одень трусы." Either take the cross off or pull up your underwear. You know, you can't be both. You're either religious or you're not religious. The point. You can't run. We're going to use this religious basis but we're not religious. You know, it's that kind of. But that's what they're doing. That's exactly what they're doing.
It's 100%. It's whether they're talking to American Protestants, evangelicals, or they're talking to leaders in the Arab world or their own population or the Lebanese, where they blame Hezbollah that why they have to do it. They change their tone and they don't have any actual stance except just we're going to do this because we're going to lie to you and this is why. And that's even the influencers on the Israeli side. They change everything what they talk about depending on who their audience is, and that's how you know your argument is just baseless.
But by the way, you know about that $7,000 that Israel is promising for the influence? You know, there are multi-million-dollar lawsuits going on because they never paid it.
They never paid it. It's absurd. You know, I remember thinking like $7,000 per post.
That's insane. The
I always thought something was weird about it. I was like, maybe it's $7,000 per month. No, it was per post. No wonder they can't pay that. It's just not possible. Because the Israeli accounts on X and stuff, they post every 5 minutes. They just flood the feeds. And anytime I post something, they quote tweet it, all saying the same thing against me. It's like they've lost the social media war and they're trying to buy it back. And they can't even do that, which is interesting that they can't buy back that. But
well, it's good in a way. I mean, if you think about it, first of all, who was the number one? This is probably it's probably too old. Well, I don't know how old are you.
I'm 21.
Okay, this was before your time. The Iraq War. Not the first Iraq War, the second one. So 2003. The number one witness to the U.S. Congress to get the U.S. government to go in and depose Saddam Hussein, who was secular, because they said, oh, he was working with the 9/11. No, he wasn't. In fact, he was suppressing them because he was a secular. Well, he was like pseudo secular too. He kind of played both.
Yeah,
but he wasn't jihadist. But the number one witness that any day now, Iraq is going to have a nuclear weapon.
Bibi?
It was Bibi. He wasn't prime minister at the moment. He was actually between jobs.
I've seen those clips. It's Bibi. He's in the Congress testifying, mark my words, it's going to happen. And then he swapped it to Iran. Yeah, I wasn't born when that was going on.
Oh, I will tell you this.
Yes.
Bibi didn't create the Iran is about to have a nuclear weapon. The earliest article I found on that, they may have been earlier, was Jerusalem Post 1986. And it said 1 month in a month they're going to have a nuclear weapon. 40 freaking years ago, they said that.
Iran was never going to have one. I mean, you could argue whether they should have, but Ayatollah Khamenei, he even issued a fatwa that just forbid it. And they didn't even have a weapons they didn't even have a nuclear weapons program.
Yep.
So that even if they wanted to get the enrichment to 90%, they had nothing to do with it at that point. They're just going to look at it. It's yeah. always been, and it was the same thing with Iraq. They tried to push it on Syria and then bombed Syria in 07, I believe, mm-hmm. to destroy their nuclear weapons program. And 4 years later, the Arab Spring happened. But that's just a buzzword to, you know, terrify Americans, especially because oh, yeah. we live in like a doomsday society, essentially, to where the rapture is coming, the nuclear weapons are going to end the world. Jeez. And, you know, we actually are the only country to ever use them twice. So, whoops. And they use that to terrify us.
And by the way, the Japanese didn't surrender because of the nuclear weapons. I mean, just one flight over Tokyo, one several-day air raid, there was like 500,000 people were burned to death. If you ever go down.
It's probably because the Red Army was in Manchuria, but they don't teach that.
The Red Army
also
took out the Kwantung Army of 1 million men in about 2 weeks, just rode right over them. They don't teach that in U.S. history.
No. No, it was the nuclear bombs that we dropped on the two highest Christian-populated cities in Japan, which was also interesting.
Yeah, that was interesting.
I don't think there's
that?
A Yeah, it very well interesting. We wonder why we indoctrinated them for the next 80 years to love us, which was weird. But it definitely, we firebombed Tokyo every night for years. But apparently killing 100,000, which we've done every other day, is what finally did it, the nail in the coffin. Like, okay, it was a mixture of everything. But World War II history, the more I've like dove into the Russian view and the Chinese view especially, the American textbooks are just wrong.
Oh, yeah.
It's really bad. You know, D-Day saved the world, actually. I didn't know that. When I grew up, D-Day is what saved everybody from Nazi Germany. That's what we're told. So
The interesting point is, by the time D-Day kicked off, the Germans were fully pushed out of the Soviet Union at that point. So they were
because it was 1944 was D-Day, right?
Yep.
At that point, the D-Day was only launched, in my opinion, because they were afraid of the Soviets pushing beyond Germany, because Hitler probably would have fought all the way to Paris, all the way to wherever he wanted to run off to. So they had to squeeze them up somewhat. But the D-Day stuff, it's the America won the war actually in the span of 1944 to 1945. History started right there. That's how America won the war. It had nothing to do with the Soviets or the Chinese, who suffered for decades before happened from the Japanese. And now we're getting a little off topic, but I can talk about this stuff forever. It's finally nice to be able to talk to someone who like understands this stuff, because here in the US especially, you know, it's real propaganda. From the time I'm a child to reading the textbooks to growing up, it's finally break through it, the narrative of America's the superhero. It's a little freeing and sad at the same time to know that this stuff we've done in Iraq, and like watching it unfold in Iran right now, opening the campaign that we prepared years for with bombing an elementary school in Manab. What is that about? It's just gross.
You know, one of my fraternity brothers, when I was my first degree, he was a history major. And I told him, you know, Eric, Soviet Union killed the majority of the Nazis. You know, 80%, 80 to 90%, somewhere around there. He started laughing because that's not what they were taught. And this is a history major. This is high school history. This is a university level history degree, history major. And, you know, and they're taught not much better than what you get in high school history, which is, you know, that sanitized, sanitized pseudo history.
It's not world history. It's just, they say it's world history, but we're in the US, so I get that it's Americanized, but it's straight up false. It's straight up false. It's not actually what happened, because they want to portray, the East, as you call it, Russia, China, and all of it. They want to portray them as, they minimize their accomplishments. They minimize the cooperation that throughout history, America and China and Russia has had. It's, you know, the Cold War did irreversible damage to the population of the U.S., whoever wrote the textbooks, the history books. And then the Cold War ends, the Soviet Union dissolves, and then Russia, who's not even communist anymore, you ask anybody around here, why is Russia bad? Genuinely, they're going to believe they're still communist. And it's just mind-blowing to me that there was never a switch that flipped of maybe we can be friends with these people, because I don't want to go to war with Russia or China, but the people in charge of America have this, Lindsey Graham, have this fantasy of Cha-ching. War and death. And yeah, he's also, take this from somebody from his area, he's probably gay. Like, there's a lot of conspiracies.
Wait a minute. Light in the Loafers, Nancy, is probably gay? I mean, seriously, he's probably?
Definitely. He's probably got some friends in, like,
110%.
He's definitely. And he was on Fox News the other day about going back to Iran. He was on Fox News and said that he's going to go back to South Carolina, where he represents, and he's going to ask the sons and the parents to send their sons and daughters to Iran. It's just insane. And he'll win the next election. He'll win every election from now on.
How does he get reelected? I mean, look, you know, I live next door to South Carolina, obviously, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Charlotte, well, I grew up in Charlotte. So that, since I was about 9 years old, I lived in Charlotte till I finished high school. How the hell do they keep electing Lindsey Graham? I mean,
no one runs against him. Yeah, he's bloodthirsty.
Oh, I know that.
He's corrupt. He is the definition of corruption. It's the stocks he holds in the military complex. It's just mind blowing. He makes so much money off of this. But it's a mixture of no one runs against him. No one has run against him in decades. Even the Republican Party doesn't dare to primary him. Oh yeah, he doesn't. When he has an election, it's just his name. There's no one else. So you're tasting some democracy with that, but it's only him. And he wins because of this Christian Zionism that it is fading slightly in the South, but it's still the main, you know, Republican base. They're evangelical Christian Zionists. And they see Lindsey Graham talking about killing the radical Islamists in Iran, and people eat it up because they get afraid of terrorism. They equate it to like 9/11 still somehow, whenever Iran helped defeat ISIS. But it goes back to the education of many Americans, to where if you don't, social media has done wonders, by the way, it helped people. But a lot of the population over the age of 30 who doesn't use social media and they just watch American media, whether it's CNN or Fox News, and they're fed the same thing when it comes to foreign relations. It's Iran is bad, evil, satanic, the root of terrorism. The state sponsor of terrorism, as they like to say. So any Americans that go die fighting them, it's a just cause, even though Iran helped us fight terrorism literally in Iraq and Syria. They helped us. It was Iran and Russia and Syria that did more than the U.S., if I recall correctly. Yeah. But apparently it was Donald Trump who ended ISIS.
Donald Trump has done everything. ISIS. Come on, Donald Trump invented the apple pie while we were at it.
Yes.
But then you get, you know, and you've grown up even more so. You know, North Carolina they've got a lot of evangelical Zionists. Mm-hmm. Not all evangelicals, obviously, Zionists. But North Carolina's got quite a few of them. But South Carolina, I think, is even more infested.
Mm-hmm.
But you get that Paula White, right, the head of the faith office. Yeah. Right, there's a faith office, and it is Paula White, the woman that keeps screaming, I say, die, I say, missiles, blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
And she's the woman that I've got a video of her where she's basically, Trump is anointed by God. And to raise your hand against Trump is to raise your hand against my.
Yeah.
Who's the religious fanatics?
Exactly. That's look, I'm all for like Christianity in America and in the government, it's just hypocrisy whenever they talk about Iran being a theological dictatorship. And then they turn around, and I've seen that video where she's, strike them down.
It's like 5 minutes.
You know? Yeah, I'm like, well, we opened up bombing kids. Does that count? Does that make you happy? Because Trump he's been on the spree of just killing. And it baffles my mind, really. It shows how strong the Israeli lobby is, and they're the ones coordinating him in the Middle East, because it baffles my mind whenever it comes to like European politics. He kind of has it right a little bit. When it comes to Ukraine, Russia, to where he's not just shipping off billions to Ukraine, but then
he's still doing a lot for Ukraine, unfortunately.
Oh yes, but he has some sense of understanding of that, and I think he understands the Russian side a little bit. But then when it comes to the Middle East, to the confusion where I get is, he is so understanding somewhat of the European side, but then in the Middle East, there's nothing. There's just absolute delusion and lies and market manipulation on Twitter to try to calm the American public. He did that. Earlier, where he tweeted something that he says this every day, there's negotiations going on. Mm-hmm. We're actually dialing stuff down. Yeah, Tehran is being bombed right now. And Iran says they're going to keep going. Why should Iran they stop?
We're not negotiating. I don't know who he's talking to.
Yeah, who are you talking to? Is it the guy in Connecticut, Reza Pahlavi? It's like, who in the hell are we negotiating with? And the U.S. just, Israel basically is planning this to where whenever the U.S. tries to reach out, the Israelis just kill a guy. Because the Israelis, this is their Netanyahu especially, this is his end game. It's overthrow Iran and set up regional dominance. It's the Israelis will keep sabotaging negotiations like they've done forever. They feed false intel. Back in June, they sabotaged everything, bombed up. And then if you take what Marco Rubio said a few weeks ago, he said it. The Israelis were going to strike Iran. We had to do it with them so Iran wouldn't retaliate against us, proving that we're in negotiations and the Israelis are preemptively striking Iran in order to sabotage everything.
But and the reality Trump is Iran wouldn't have hit American bases. No. If it was just Israel.
I mean, no, because it would have been the same as June. It would have been the same thing. Iran would have fired at Israel and called Trump and said, hey, wrangle them in. What the hell is going on? And Israel knew that once they struck Iran with America, that everything that everybody's been saying the whole time would have happened. And it's like, do you not think that Donald Trump wouldn't know this as well? They know that this is going to happen. They're not idiots. Well, he kind of is. But the administration and the military, they're not stupid. They know that the strait was going to be shut. They know that Iran was going to strike the Gulf and Israel and all of this was going to happen. But he did it anyway because he is not with American interests. He's with the Israeli interests. He's furthering the Israeli agenda and just sacrificing all the American bases in Baghdad that are getting blown to hell in Erbil. They're just abandoned and they're getting smoked right now by Iraqi militias. And he doesn't care because this is just a game for them. This is a chess game in the Middle East and they don't care what repercussions happen in the American economy. Gas here is really bad. It is getting worse. The stock market is just volatile. It's fluttering up and down. Crypto's long gone. So
yeah, I've got some crypto.
Sacrifice the midterms. Yeah, believe me, this is rough territory right now for the Bitcoin. And he sacrificed down. The midterms as well. Don't even remind me. But he sacrificed everything. The midterms also, the government's also shut down. A lot of people don't know this. The government's shut down right now. The DHS isn't getting funded. Airports are backed up. And
really, DHS is not getting funded.
Mm-hmm. The airports are backed up. They had to send ICE agents into the airport to start working them. It's that bad.
Really?
It's really bad. Oh, Atlanta has a five-hour wait right now in the security.
In security has a five-hour wait?
Mm-hmm. Originally, it wrapped around the baggage claim, and now it's wrapping outside of the airport.
Wait,
photos today. Yeah.
That's internal or to fly out of the country?
If you just go to check in, if you're just going to check in, it's domestic. It's not the international terminal. Domestic. Holy. So it hits Americans. It's not even hitting. It's hitting Americans literally. That ground traffic is just being totally stranded, and you can kind of point this to the Iranians and say, well, the war is taking attention away from the shutdown happening. So that's also something else that's being hurt right now, and they don't care.
5 hours for domestic flights just to get through security.
Mm-hmm. I would say at least. I know I saw a TikTok today. I can confirm this, that people were getting to the airport a day ahead and sleeping in the terminal just so they wouldn't miss their flight. Like they're getting there the day before, checking in, and then just sleeping at the gate. Yep.
Yeah, I remember back when you could just walk up to the gate before they had security. It was at the gate. In fact, I was in one of my friends was best friends from high school was getting married, and I was in Officer Basic at that point at Fort Knox, and I was running late, And I drove into Louisville, parked my car, grabbed my suitcase, and went running, literally jumping over people that are like sitting around, laying around. I'm just like, there was an old commercial with, I can't remember which sportsman was doing it, and his sneakers, I think, if I remember correctly. He was running through the airport, jumping. This is me running through the airport. And the security was just at the gate. I come running up there. You know, I just had a bag with me, a carry-on bag. So I just popped the carry-on bag. It goes through the metal detector. It's like, here you go. I was one of the last people in. But yeah, I mean, you can't imagine that anymore. Geez, you know, just
no.
In any airport, even in Russia and anywhere in the world, it's security is now insane everywhere. Mm-hmm. But 5 hours is just
so bad.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That, wow. I don't have anything else to say for that. Holy crap.
We're having some bad internal issues right now in the U.S. We're having some issues. The gas is up. Travel entirely. You try to drive by car, it's even more expensive now. So we're having a travel problem. And it's, they don't care about Iran. It's, you know, we have a war going on, but Fox News is busy talking about kittens and puppies. And the newest Democratic hoax in Minnesota. It's like, come on. We're literally in the middle of a mini genocide that we're conducting. And this is what we're going to be talking about. Anything to get the mind off of it.
When you leave the U.S., even in Europe, mm-hmm. as bad as Europe is on freedom of speech these days, I mean, England is an open-air gulag. They arrested like 15,000 people last year. 15 mm-hmm. friggin' thousand people. They're letting murderers and rapists out of their jails because they don't have enough places to put TikTokers and, you know, people saying, I don't like these migrants. There's too many of them. Yep, in jail. No, I mean, I'm being quite literal. One of the first women.
Yeah, 100%.
She was a mother of two. Or she is a mother of two. They gave her 2 years because she put a message, I'm sick and tired of all these migrants.
Mm-hmm.
She took it off, apologized, and got 2 years. You know.
The UK is really bad.
Germany's not good either. All of these countries are bad. But even there, when you listen to the media, you still get more of a view of the world than you do in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't really have to control our free speech here because we're not going to say anything that's too smart anyway because we're fed just total junk. And it's because we're kind of isolated. I mean, we're halfway across the world. Nothing's ever going to happen here. Nothing ever did happen here. Ancestors, great ancestors, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, it wasn't here. Like, people didn't – we've never really experienced war.
Since the Civil War.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And in Europe, they understand, especially, you know, the Russians, the Arabs. These are people that, like, know they live through what's happening. They've lived through history. And Western Europe, the EU plus the UK, has taken this approach of the weird immigration craze to where, you know, like you were talking about, oh, we have a declining birth rate. What are we going to do? We're going to try to make it good for our citizens who are already here or take the Angela Merkel 2015 route of import our population, which is weird.
You know, there's if you read Plato's Republic, one of the things you notice what Plato gets at is that tyrants don't rise up from monarchs. Tyrants rise up from the people because you have the people, a democracy of sort, that eventually turns into an oligarchy. And then some populist comes along and says, hey, elect me and I'll take the power back to the people. And the moment he gets in, he becomes a tyrant, starts stealing. Well, the reason they import migrant or foreigners from particularly poor foreigners, because for them, mm-hmm. it's still an increase in their quality of life. So they'll be loyal to the tyrant. Because the citizens are going, wait a minute, we didn't elect you for this. We've got issues mm-hmm. and questions. So he has to import so the tyrant has to import a population that'll be loyal to him.
Mm-hmm. And hand them a lot of stuff as well.
Yeah.
The food, the housing in the UK, the hotels and all of that.
Oh, you see that in the U.S.
too. Away so they keep voting. Yeah.
You see that in the U.S.
Starting to happen.
Yeah.
We're just too big of a country for people to really kind of pick up on it. But it'll, you know, I've already, it's sad to say, I've already accepted defeat that eventually it's just, I mean, really. Because what's the Republican Party going to fix it? Trump's in charge and they're not doing it. And the Democrats aren't. It's like one big game to where they just try to outperform each other negatively. It's really bad.
It takes economic collapse. Because when the pie gets really small, that's when people start getting really angry.
Well, we've been heading that direction with inflation for a while. They're just printing money constantly out of the Fed Reserve. And inflation here is rampant. And even though, like, Trump likes to brag he's brought inflation down, the prices still remain the same. It's, right. You know, inflation's down 2%, whatever. Like, under Biden, it was like 10%. The prices will never go back to what they were. Nope. Now it's just slowly rising. But back on the immigration thing, one thing that I always like to make a point with people, that, like, the immigrants that are coming to Europe and America, whatever, they're not even coming from the countries we're at war with. So this weird thing to where the Europeans are just absolutely hating. They're just mindlessly hating some of these immigrants. But then they'll support the Israelis because the Israelis portray this idea that they're fighting for Western civilization. But the Israelis are like killing Iranians and Lebanese and Palestinians. And then the Europeans import people from like Bangladesh and Pakistan and India. And they just don't grasp that. They don't understand that Israel doesn't fight for Western civilization. They're just duping everybody into this idea of we have to kill the Muslims so they don't come to Europe. Well, you're going to import them anyway. Like, they're already happening. Like, I promise you that some radical jihadist is not going to, like, come out of Iran. They're more likely to come out of the countries that we already destroyed, like Iraq, like Syria in 2024. Mm-hmm. Those, because it's the West's fault, but it's kind of America's fault that these people are grown up watching their families get killed and they have some revenge in their heart. Mm-hmm. That is a problem that you have created. And to just now bomb Iran and the Israelis who are just excited because it's not their problem anymore.
Oh yeah.
You're just creating more terrorism. We're fighting the state sponsor of terrorism in Iran, allegedly. And just like Iraq, just like Syria, it's just going to backfire. And you're going to really see what terrorism is like whenever you kill these people's families.
Well, let me ask you this. How much of the young voters, you know, the 18 to 30-year-olds, how many of them are supporting all of this?
It's very low. It's good. This isn't just like me saying it or a social media trend. Like, it is. I have friends in college. I have my little brother in school who is sending me, it's a little cliche, but they're sending me reels about this stuff. They're sending me social media stuff and they're calling me like, are we at war with Iran because of what's AIPAC? And it's like, seriously. Yeah. And it is fully changing. And I guess it's because we use social media and we're able to connect the dots better and actually engage with these people that are, we're seeing the videos. It's, you know, Fox News isn't going to show you a video out of Gaza or out of Iran or out of southern Lebanon, and nothing on the TV will ever show you that because the media here is, you know, it's rough. It's really rough. And do you be able to use social media, especially the younger generation, because, you know, an 85-year-old in South Carolina, Fox News is telling him what he wants to hear. But this younger generation, this is how I kind of learned about it, is you see the videos and you go, I just watched a child get shot in Gaza. Why did that happen? Yeah. I just watched a family in Lebanon just get bombed. And now you hear about the school bombing in Iran, which they talked about on Fox News. They haven't talked about it in a few weeks. And then Trump just says, wasn't us. It's like, okay, it was a Tomahawk cruise missile. Really? Iran doesn't have that.
No. Apparently Iran has bought some
Tomahawk. Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually.
I'm not sure how they got them, but, you know.
Yeah, they somehow got it under the harsh sanctions, and we destroyed everything they have, but they have enough to throw a Tomahawk on their own school. Yeah, that makes sense.
Well, look, people believe it.
They believe it here. It's crazy.
The Donbass, I mean, I'm from those areas. I'm from Lugansk originally. So, you know, since 2014, what have the Ukrainians, Kyiv, been saying? Oh, they're shooting at their own kids. It's not us bombing their schools. It's the rebels shooting at their own kids. Right. So, we take our kids to school, then we just shoot them. You know.
Yeah, the parents drop their kids off at school, then fire artillery rounds into the elementary school. It's
what level of imbecile do you have to be to actually believe that? But apparently, you know, quite a few people believe that because it's convenient.
It's also here how absurd on the Ukraine-Russia topic, just history with Israel, history started October 7th, 2023. And with Russia-Ukraine, history started February 2022. There's nothing else that happened before that. They don't ever want to talk about NATO. They don't ever want to talk about, you know, putting Ukraine in NATO on Russia's doorstep. Has like Russia's allowed a lot to happen, to be honest. They've allowed a lot of NATO expansion waves and just went, we don't really like this, but we're not going to react in a way, because if you guys want to be idiots. And it's always been Ukraine. It's always been the red line. And they just, they kept pushing it. They kept doing it. And they overthrew the government in 2014. No one here knows about that stuff. No one here has any idea. They see Zelensky is a Western guy. He's a president against this horrible regime in Russia. And it's like, history started in 2022 in the same way in Israel that it started in 2023. There is no backstory. It happened at literally, it's out of nowhere. Whenever it started in 2022, or whenever it escalated in 2022, it was the unprovoked, that's how they worded it, the unprovoked invasion of Ukraine by Russia. Like, unprovoked, are we serious? Just like the Palestinians were being slaughtered for decades, people in the Donbass were slaughtered for decades by the Ukrainians. And whenever these people fight back, as they have the right to do so, you have the right to try not to get killed. And you, like in Gaza, like in Lebanon, these people have the right to just not accept being bombed. And for some reason, in the U.S., in the West especially, I hate to keep harping on that. I sound like an anti-American, but I really hate to do that. Like, I have the flag behind me. I'm born here. I live here. And I don't want to sound like some just like, I hate America. But it's the truth that we're fed this reality of history started in 2023 and 2022 for both conflicts. Mm-hmm. And if you question anything, you're anti-Semitic. And if you question anything about Russia, Ukraine, you're just wrong. You're evil. You're wrong. Right. How dare you support the Russian genocide happening in Ukraine? But if you dare call what Israel's doing, which is comparing what happened in Russia to Ukraine is minimal. It's absolutely minimal compared to what the Israelis are doing. Oh, yeah. But they don't want to bring up numbers like that because it shatters everything. It shatters it all like that. So, I'll let you talk. I was going.
I was going to say, questioning the narrative of a corrupt government is not anti-patriotic. It's actually patriotic. Mm-hmm. Going along just because somebody in power who's making money off of this says this is the right way. You know, and say, you know, just remember, concentration camps in Germany were lawful. Uh-huh. That was the law. They weren't against the law because they passed a law that says, we could do this. So, was it moral? Hell no, but that was legal.
People, it's this. I lose my mind sometimes. And I'm glad I'm able to talk to a lot of people like you and people, the viewers and all of that, that really understand what's actually happening, that there's actually people outside of this small American bubble that actually is everyone else, essentially, that sees what's actually happening in the world. And I lose my mind about it. But it's really rough. America was, I made a video about this, and America was founded on resistance. Like, the revolutionaries were founded on resistance. They resisted, and the British called them terrorists. They called them traitors, terrorists, the rebels, and all of that. It was founded off of resistance, the British Empire. But no one can make that correlation that America was founded on resistance. And when anybody else resists, they're immediately labeled a terrorist. It's, you know, as an American, I'm a patriot. And if someone's oppressed, like the colonists were, how dare you put 2% tax on RT? We're going to rise up. We're going to destroy you. And you have a right, a fundamental human right, to resist an occupation or an oppression. Like the in Donbass, they were oppressed. And in Palestine, they're occupied and oppressed, of course.
Yeah.
And you have a fundamental human right, whether it's lawful or not, you have a fundamental right as a human to resist what is happening to you, which is evil, whether it's the Ukrainians doing it or the Israelis doing it. And then the American media, the Western media, spins it as they're terrorists that are being oppressed. The Gazans, all the kids that are killed, they're there because of Hamas. Are you serious? Why is Hamas there? Why are these people taking up arms? Why are these people resisting? Oh, yeah, because it's an open-air prison. Why did this happen in Ukraine? Oh, did Russia just wake up on the wrong... Did Putin wake up on the wrong side of the bed one morning?
That's what, like, they say. That's
what a lot of people literally say. It's unprovoked.
Literally say that.
it's Putin's crazy. Okay, well, why didn't he... He's been president you know, who's president in the 2000s, came back in 2013. And why did he just decide to do it in 2022? Probably because Biden and Kamala Harris wanted Ukraine to join NATO. I'm just going to throw that out there because they've had this idea. I'm really diving in deep now. Ukraine's always had this idea post-coup, from my understanding. You know more than me about it. But they wanted to join NATO to essentially bring NATO into Ukraine to crush everything happening in the Donbass. And Russia said it's a national security issue for Ukraine to join NATO. And morally, it's hard to watch people continuously get slaughtered for years on end until something boils over, like what happened on October 7th, like what's happening. That's how Hezbollah was created in Lebanon as well. It reaches a tipping point of constant poking at people.
Well, it's not just in this case, it's not just it's not just watching people get slaughtered. First of all, these are historical Russian lands. We'll just begin with that. The Soviets divided up and created Ukraine out of
Khrushchev had a Ukrainian wife and he got riled up to get Crimea back to Ukraine.
Well, that's the first thing. Until 1922, there was nowhere in Ukraine. Ukraine, the very word Kraina means hinterland. It's hinterland. You don't have a nation called hinterland because you can't have a nation called hinterland because it's the edge of something else. In this case, it was the edge of Rzecz Pospolita, which is the Polish former Polish Empire, and the Russian Empire. You know, this is the land, that land. And historically, that was Russian land back in the 900s and 1000s. So, and Crimea was never part of that land, by the way. Crimea was part of it was actually part of the Kuban lands, which are today's Krasnodarsky Krai, that area, belonged to that governorship. It's all divided in these big governorships. You had Nova Russia, which means New Russia, and you had Mala Russia, which means Little Russia. That was the whole of today's Ukraine, plus some other areas that were added on later on by Stalin and by Khrushchev. So yeah, that's what you hear. Yeah, you're right. You know, it all started. You know what the curse of Ukraine was? The Eastern Ukraine. Now I'm not talking about Crimea, which was autonomous, never wanted to be part of anything but Russia. But the eastern provinces were demanding federalization. Yeah, I know it's insane. This radical.
Wait, idea. When?
When everything went 2014, they were demanding.
Okay, yeah.
They wanted.
Well,
the
there
right
was
to
a constitutional.
Governors.
Wasn't there in the Minsk agreements? Wasn't there? Or was this before then? There was supposed to be a constitutional amendment to make them autonomous, right?
This was 2013, 2014, as the coup started. The people came out. They demanded federalization. They wanted the right to elect their governors and have a say in where their money went. Because the way Ukraine runs, and still runs today, it's a feudal mafia state. So these oligarchs, they get placed as governors. They're not elected. They just get placed as governors over some province. And that's their feeding ground. Their job is to suck money out of that, give a portion to Kyiv, who's ever sitting in power there, and a portion for themselves. They don't invest. They're there to just suck money out of this. So Ukraine went from, in 1991, when the Soviet Union collapsed, Ukraine had an industrial and scientific base the size of France. By 2021, when it got compared to Uganda, and the Ugandan president came on the air and said, "Don't you dare compare us to those people. We're a lot richer than they are."
Yeah.
I mean, that's how far it fell in 30 years of just nonstop pillaging.
And the corruption index, which just goes hand in hand with that, is they never bring that up either, is that Ukraine was rated over and over again the most corrupt nation in Europe. But the second
in the world, probably.
In the world. But the second everything started, apparently the comedian is now a hero fighter. He's a freedom fighter ruling under martial law, but he has to do it. But and
he has to kill his political opponents. I mean, what choice does he have? It's a war.
Yeah, one of his best friends had to flee his mansion with golden toilets, and he goes to Israel out of all places. Like, how does this even happen? Like, how does everything tie together perfect like this? And now he's sending the drone experts to the Gulf. It's just absurd. You know, while he's begging for help the whole time. He wants to be strong whenever he feels like it. He comes out and says, we actually can help you shoot all these down. We've been through this. We know how to do it. But then he'll turn to Europe and just start begging, complaining, and says that they need more and more help. He's an actor. He plays it really well. I'll give him credit. He plays the two-faced coin very, very well. But for people that see through it, it's just mind-boggling how this dude is still in charge.
You got to look at it this way. Nobody in out of the Ukrainian leadership is planning on dying of old age in Ukraine. Ukraine is a feeding trough for these pigs. And the Ukrainian people are the meat. You know, as long as they can be sold into this endless war and they're getting money for it. Zelensky's parents live in Ashkelon in a mansion that he bought them. His wife and kids live in London, where he owns a lot of property. And apparently he's the ninth largest private landowner in America now.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's very interesting. Or I remember back when that weird mineral deal was going on.
Nobody talks about it anymore.
Yeah, because it was ridiculous. You look at who was buying all the plants. It was like BlackRock. It was all of these BlackRock ups, and they still own a lot of them. Oh, yeah. And they had this idea of we'll have BlackRock, the corrupt American companies, buy these plants on the front lines and just hope that Russia just walks up to him and goes, oh, sorry, we hit a red line. We hit BlackRock. And the Russians were just like, you know, I don't think that's going to work. And regardless, BlackRock was already in Ukraine. And like the Epstein files, the Rothschilds are in Ukraine. Epstein was all in Ukraine. BlackRock was in Ukraine. And it was all post-2014. And it's really hard to explain that stuff here in the U.S. because – you know, my YouTube got demonetized, not because of the Israeli stuff, because I made a video about Orban going against Zelensky with funding, and they demonetized my channel on that video.
Because of that?
That video. Yes, because they still have these law rules. That's what they told me about since 2022 for disinformation. And out of everything I've said about Israel, which I thought would have got me, nope, it was all about Ukraine, because when it comes to Israel and America, they call you anti-Semitic. When it comes to Ukraine, they just don't even try to refute you. There's no, you're racist, you're this or that. It's just, we're not even going to listen to what you're saying because you're so crazy. It can't be real. Ukraine, the coup, it wasn't a coup. You're crazy. I had a debate with somebody, and I kind of made the argument like a real basic level when I said, Ukraine was in turmoil. Do you just not think that America would step in and flip the government? Because it's on Russia's doorstep. I'm like, would the CIA not see that opportunity on the doorstep of Russia? We would never do that. Why? Why would we ever do that? The CIA, what do we have interest in Ukraine? That we can turn into a rump state to just fight Russia. That is the reason that the U.S. saw an opportunity. It was a failing state, basically. And you give enough people some money and the protesters, they'll do whatever they want. And
then you prop up a guy. Listen to Newland, where she admitted they spent $5 billion.
Can't bring that up. They said there's no proof. They were talking about the big guy, Biden. They was going to give him a pat on the back, like the, you know, you've got it, bro. No, that stuff here is the more I think about it, I didn't really understand this until now. This might surprise you that the Ukraine-Russia topic, if you go against the narrative with Ukraine-Russia, it's honestly more, you get more hate for that than you do the Israel topic nowadays in 2025. Because the Israel topic, people are slowly coming to it and they're more open to ideas. But with Russia-Ukraine, it's just an absolute stone wall because like you had to dive back to the history of Israel, you have to do the same thing with Ukraine. And it's a long process to get these people, but people just won't get over the fact that everybody in Russia doesn't want to kill us. It's not the Soviet Union. It's absurd.
Nobody in the Soviet Union wanted to kill Americans. If we're going to,
I know. If you look, I saw a poll in the 80s that was like from the Soviets and the Americans. It was a poll of how likely do you think a nuclear war is going to break out? And the American people had like a 70% chance, and the Soviets were like 10%. It's like, we're not going to fight a war. What are you talking about? You know, the Americans have been breeding this forever, this doomsday. We have TV shows. Protestants have, I'm Protestant, but I don't have this idea of like a rapture. The end of the world is going to happen.
Yeah.
The apocalypse is going to happen. And like, it's Russia, Iran, China, this evil axis is going to start it. And I'm like, they don't do anything. Really, China? Are you serious? Iran? We just attacked them. Like, we've been building up NATO to fight Russia forever, but apparently they're the ones that are building it up. It's nuts.
If you want to blow their mind, 1949 is when NATO was formed. 1948, Stalin asked to join NATO for a Europe-wide security organization. By the way, the first attempts to build a European-wide security structure and to start a League of Nations, which was the version one of the UN, was Nicholas II. So for the 1880s, Russia's been trying to stop all these wars in Europe.
Russia, if failed, I believe correctly, Russia was trying to join Europe in those times, right?
They were trying to modernize. I mean, Russia was the biggest, it was the fifth largest economy in the world. U.S. was fourth largest economy in the world at that point. Britain was the first, and then Germany, then France. But, I mean, Russia owns about a fourth of Europe, as always, the continent. But the Russian Empire, Nicholas II, was trying to set up a European peace or European security structure, what Putin's talking about. That idea has been around on the Russian side since the 1880s. So 140 years ago, Russia's trying to set up a Europe-wide peace security structure to avoid having any wars, to avoid, World War I, for example, then World War II.
They were right. You had Napoleon, you had the German Empire, you had Hitler, and then you had NATO trying to do the same thing. It always... But they don't tell you that stuff here.
Yeah,
they really don't. You can't even question it. How dare you? How dare you?
Russia's the evil country that wants to invade her. Right? Russia's been trying to make a peace structure for 140 years to avoid any world wars.
Putin as well try to join in the 2000s? He asked about it?
Putin tried to join in 2000. Yeltsin asked to join in 1992.
Yeah, and I remember that with Clinton, right? And Clinton just joked it off or something.
When Yeltsin, when I was talking to Colonel Wilkerson, because he was chief of staff for Colin Powell, both in the military and when Colin Powell was Secretary of State, from what he said, because Yeltsin asked, it was George Bush Sr., and from what he said, they were actually contemplating doing it. At that point, and then they lost the elections. Clinton came in. Clinton had this little problem with DNA, his DNA on a couple of dresses. Banging the intern. And he had to get it off. He had to act tough. That's what Wilkerson says. And that's how it all went. Got deep sixed because of that. So I don't know. Maybe. I've got another call coming up. It's been a great conversation. I'm pretty sure not the only one.
Of course.
I'm glad you came on. Hope everybody found it interesting.
A great time. It was awesome. Here. I had a great time.
And it's good to see that the youth in the U.S. is buying into the, into the Zionist. I don't know how else to call it. I mean, it's Christian Zionism, Jewish Zionism. It's this cult thing. And it's the death of America if this continues. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's talk realistically. It'll collapse the country from internally. So hopefully people wake up and stop this insanity before we all get blown up. So hopefully we're here to have another conversation.
Let's hope something bad doesn't happen. But I think the youth is waking up. They are 100%. So,
The joke in the 1970s and 1980s was, what do you want to be if you grow up? Yeah. So because the fear of nuclear war was palatable. I mean, and you're right. Everybody was constant egging on and on it. And so unfortunately it hasn't changed that much. So anyways, thank you. Thank you. We will definitely talk again. And everybody, thank you. For joining. If you have any questions for Ethan, leave them in the comments. He'll have the link so he can answer. And have a good night. See you in the next one.